Thanks. You can all be seated. I think the microphone's working. This is good. I used to do sound for funerals occasionally. Helped out with a number of them. That's just setting up the microphones. If they've got someone singing, making sure that's all audible. And part of that is getting there early to set up. Make sure it's all right before anyone gets there, because you don't want it going wrong for a funeral. They're emotional enough times anyway without something going wrong. I remember one time I rock up and the coffin's in the room already, which is not unusual. They typically get that in there as early as they can. But this time the lid happened to be off the coffin. So obviously some of the family members couldn't come to see the person before the funeral, so they'd organised to come early. No one had told me this was happening. So I rock up and there's this woman lying in her coffin. And she just looks like she's peacefully asleep. Like, I know she's dead, but that's all it looks like. So I have to set up, and I'm really uncomfortable by this. This is not, it's doing my head in. But on reflection, I thought, it never actually occurred to me that she might start breathing, get out of that coffin and walk out of the room. Mm-hmm. You know, I've read my Bible. There's a number of people who were resurrected. But it didn't occur to me because it's not something we normally happens. It's not a usual occurrence. Yeah. So we're continuing our series today on encounters with Jesus. And we're going to look at one of the most well-known resurrections in the Bible. So if you turn your Bibles to John chapter 11, where we're looking at the death of Lazarus. It's interesting, we're in March, it's the third month of the year. I've preached twice this year, this is my second time. Both times on a man named Lazarus who died. Just one of those things.
Coincidental.
Yeah, totally coincidental. To get you into position in the story, we're at the end of Jesus' ministry here. We are weeks before he is crucified. The Jews in Jerusalem are ready to kill him. They've gotten to the point where he has to die in their minds. So he, at this time, is somewhere beyond the Jordan, out of their reach. Now, it's in chapter 11, verse 1. Now a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. So Bethany, as we find out later, is 2 miles from Jerusalem, right in the danger zone for Jesus. And these people know him, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. They were friends of his. And Lazarus has been sick. And the word used means he's been sick for a while and he's progressively gotten worse. So his sisters, they've left it for a while because, you know, he could get better. He could wake up tomorrow feeling a lot better. But he's gotten to the point where they reach out to Jesus and say, Lord, it says it in verse 3, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick. And when Jesus hears this, he says something that must brighten everyone around him. This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Now, you and I know that Lazarus is going to die.
Yes.
But the disciples didn't. So they're obviously going, yeah, cool, he's not going to die, we're good. So when Jesus waits around 2 days, they probably think it's strange. But not overly so, because, you know, Jesus knows what he's doing. And then he says, we're going to go to Judea again. And he says the reason in verse 11, our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him up. Now, you can understand the disciples go, okay, cool, sleeping, that's great for healing. Because they don't understand it. You know, John actually points out in verse 13, however, Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought he was speaking about taking rest in sleep. Jesus was changing the narrative about death here. I'll talk more about it later, but death to the Jews was final. And Jesus is saying, no, because Lazarus trusts in me, he is asleep. Mm-hmm. See, a believer, when they die, it's not the end. Their soul goes to be in heaven with Jesus. Their body goes in the ground, awaiting the resurrection at the rapture of the church. And throughout the New Testament, death is talked about of believers asleep because of this. But Jesus at this point was trying to teach his disciples that. So then in verse 14, Lazarus is dead, and I'm glad for your sakes that I was not there, that you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go to him. And in verse 17, so when Jesus came, he found that he had already been in the tomb 4 days. So the scene is set. It's a bit of a long scene setting. Jesus is on the outskirts of Bethany. Lazarus is dead in a tomb. His sisters are in the house being comforted. And that's where we start. And I want to show you in this thing, the message is entitled, When the Hopeless Encounter Jesus. So I wanted to show you three groups of hopeless people now. The first group is Lazarus. You might have noticed he's dead. Now, as I said, we don't see people resurrect. I didn't expect that woman at the funeral to get up alive. But to a Jew at this time, death was incredibly final. See, they didn't really know anything about what happened after death. They knew that the soul went to a place called Sheol, but everyone went there. And that's all they knew. They had a belief in a resurrection at the end of the age, so when God calls time on the world. But what happened between that, they didn't know. We learned everything we know about what happens after death from Jesus. So they didn't have that. So they saw it as final, this sort of, you know, your life is over, you're over. And this was made worse because at the time there was a group called the Sadducees, a religious group. Every group in Israel at the time was religious. They didn't separate secular and religious, everything was religious. But the Sadducees were an interesting mob, only a small group of them. They only thought the first 5 books of the Bible, you know, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, were authoritative, throwing out all the prophets. They didn't believe in angels or demons, and they thought that once you died, that was it. There was no afterlife. Now, I said there were a small group of people. They just happened to be the priests, you know, the leaders of the nation. So this is what they would have been teaching the people. So the people have this idea of finality of death. But you'll notice it says he's been in the tomb 4 days. No word in the Bible is there by accident. So why are they mentioned 4 days? See, there was this Jewish superstition that when you died, your soul would hover around the body for 3 days, waiting on the chance that you might come back to life, that there might be a chance to come back together. But, you know, it's the Middle East, it's hot. So they'd bury you straight away, because otherwise you start decomposing. But even in a tomb, by the 4th day, the body was said to be so disfigured that the soul lost hope and then went to Sheol. So in Jewish thought, Lazarus is beyond hope of any resurrection until the end of the age, at best. So that's our first hopeless person. The second hopeless person is his sisters. We come down to verse 21. Martha's come out to meet Jesus at the outskirts of town. And Martha says to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When her sister Mary comes out, she says the exact same words to him. And we can understand, you know, they've lost loved ones. I actually have lived a blessed life. All four of my grandparents are still alive, both my parents, all of my siblings. I haven't actually been touched by death with anyone I was very close with. So I don't understand the heartache that they're going through with their brother having died. But there's more to it than that. When I met Elise, I'm looking at her smiling at this, she was working as a nurse, earning not a bad amount of money. She'd already bought a block of land, was building a house on it, had a dog, had all the furniture for the house, all the appliances. When I moved in after we got married, I brought some clothes and a box about yay, big, and that was it. Because she was able to look after herself financially. It wasn't the same in the first century. See, there wasn't a lot of opportunity for women to trade and earn money. They were reliant first on their father and then their husband, and then when he died, their sons. But Mary and Martha weren't married, and their father was most likely dead, as he's never mentioned and no husbands are mentioned, ever. So they were relying on Lazarus for their financial security. And he's dead. So they're facing destitution. But it's worse than this. You see, part of Israel's worship of God was offering sacrifices for the covering of sins. And in the original tabernacle, there was this courtyard. In it was the altar. And everyone who was ceremonially clean could come into that courtyard. But by the first century in Herod's temple, they've made this massive temple, and it has this massive outer courtyard. Courtyard of the Gentiles, where anyone could enter. And they'd made it into a marketplace, which Jesus then cleared out. Then inside that was another courtyard fenced off. There was the courtyard of the women and children. And then inside that was another courtyard called the courtyard of the Israelites. Now, where do you think the altar was? It was in the courtyard of the Israelites, where only men could go to it. So in order for them to offer sacrifices for the forgiveness of their sins, the covering of their sin, they needed a man to do it. And they had no man now. So not only were they facing financial destitution, they were facing a spiritual, religious destitution. They were very hopeless. But I want you to notice something about them when they're hopeless. These women are in the lowest time that they probably will ever be. And notice what Martha says to Jesus in verse 22. You know, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you. And we'll see later when we get to Mary in the story. She falls at his feet in worship of him. See, these people are in this deep, dark circumstance, but it hasn't changed their relationship to God and who God is. And it doesn't do it for us either. It doesn't matter what circumstance we're in. And also notice they're not afraid to come to him and say, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. You know, they're not afraid to be real with him. They don't come and say, oh, it's good that you're here, Jesus. You know, I'm ignoring the fact Lazarus has died. No, they put it out. We're in trouble. Yeah. And God wants you to be real with him. Yeah. So, and we see that Jesus comforts them here. Martha, he says to her, you know, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I'll know that he'll rise again in the resurrection of the last day. Then Jesus said to her, in verse 25, I am the resurrection and the life. One of the great I am statements, where Jesus was claiming to be God. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? And Martha says to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." Acknowledging him as God, as Lord, which at this point in time was dangerous for her, because the Jews from Jerusalem didn't want anyone to do that. So there we go, first two hopeless people. Lazarus, who is hopelessly dead. Mary and Martha, who are hopelessly destitute. And now we get to the third group of people, the Jews. See, Jewish mourning was a little different to how we mourn. From what I've seen, most people mourn somewhat privately, maybe close family around them. Jews didn't do that. They had a 30-day period of mourning prescribed. First 7 days were more sort of intense mourning. And the first 3 days were very intense mourning. Unless it was Sabbath during that time. They took a day off for Sabbath and would just put another one on the end. And during those first 3 days, there was a lot of going to the tomb, publicly wailing at the tomb. They were loud. There was no sort of be quiet and circumspect. No, they would scream. And, you know, they, as Elise said a couple of weeks ago, you had to have a wailing woman at your funeral and a flute player. Mm. And family and friends would come during this time, lots of them, to wail with you, to comfort you, to look after you. And this has happened with Mary and Martha. They're near Jerusalem, so people they knew in Jerusalem would have come. People from all around would have traveled to come and comfort them. So when Jesus calls for Mary, Martha goes and gets her. And Mary gets up, and it says in verse 31, "Then the Jews who were with her in the house and comforting her, when they saw that Mary rose up quickly and went out, followed her, saying, 'She is going to the tomb to weep there.'" So whereas earlier, when Martha went to see Jesus, there was just him, his disciples, and Martha around, now there's a crowd of mourners around Jesus as Mary falls at his feet and says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And Jesus sees them weeping, and he groans in spirit, and he said in verse 34, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." Have you ever asked yourself why Jesus wept? Because I always thought, when I was younger, that he was weeping because he felt the loss of Lazarus. The reason we cry at funerals. But that doesn't make sense, because Jesus knew it was about to happen. He knew that in a very short amount of time, the fact that Lazarus was dead would no longer be a fact, and he'd be alive. No, Jesus is weeping because here is the price of sin. The Bible's very clear, the wages of sin is death. And here he is seeing the price of sin in his friend, because he died. But he's also seeing it in these Jews. See, he has just declared to Martha, he is the resurrection and the life. And here he stands in front of these Jews, and all they can say is what they say in verse 37. "Could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying?" They are hopelessly lost in their sin, heading to an eternity without God, because they have the solution to the death problem. Yeah. Jesus, you know, the resurrection and the life, standing in front of them, and they don't see it. So there are our three hopeless people. Three groups of hopeless people, I should say. Lazarus, hopelessly dead. His sisters, hopelessly destitute. And the Jews, hopelessly dead in their sins. All of them needing an encounter with Jesus. And we see what he does. He goes to the tomb, gets them to roll away the stone. Martha again says he's been in the tomb 4 days. This is a bad idea. He's going to be decomposing and stinky. I don't know. Living out here, you've probably all driven past kangaroos, side of the road, dead. I remember one, I had to make sure the air con was set to just get air from inside the car because it smelled horrible. Just the quick drive past was enough to that you didn't want to. And then Jesus prays to God in verse 41. Father, I thank you that you have heard me, and I know that you always hear me, but because of the people who are standing by, I said this, that they may believe that you sent me. What I first want you to notice in this prayer is that he talks about God hearing him. One of the names for God in the Old Testament is Yahweh Yireh, which means the God who hears. God hears you. Even when your prayers seem to be bouncing off the ceiling, they're not. That's what it feels like to you. God still hears you. Know that God always hears you. Take comfort in that God always hears you. But also notice what Jesus doesn't pray for. He doesn't at any point ask God or plead with God to raise Lazarus from the dead. See, the Jews knew their Old Testament better than we do. And they would have known the story of Elijah raising a widow's son. And in that story, Elijah pleads with God desperately, God, give this widow back her son. And the son is resurrected and handed back to the widow. God, in his compassion, raised him. But Jesus doesn't do that. Instead, after praying these things, verse 43, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And Lazarus came forth alive. You know, if he hadn't said Lazarus, if he had just said, come forth, it's not unreasonable to think that every soul in the bosom of Abraham would have come out of their grave resurrected.
Yeah.
Now, you'll notice that Lazarus was bound head and foot with grave clothes. He had to have the stone rolled away. He was raised to life to die again, unfortunately. He wasn't given his resurrected body. He is currently waiting in heaven, like all the other saints, for his resurrected body.
Yeah.
But he was alive. There are two major things I want you to take away from this story today. Number one, when God delays, it's for his glory and your benefit. I don't know about you, but there's been a number of times when I've been asking God for something. And I've looked in the Bible and I know it's not, you know, something that he wouldn't do, but it hasn't happened yet. And I get frustrated. It reminds me of a story I heard where a man was flying home from Florida and he had to switch planes at another airport. So first flight happens, no issues. Sits down on the next flight, he's thinking, cool, I'll be home soon to see my wife. And then a flight attendant comes up and says, I'm sorry, sir, but we need to actually get you off this plane. That seat's been booked by someone else. There's been a mix-up. You can imagine he's not real happy about this. He wanted to be home. So he gets off, finds out that the next flight doesn't leave until the next morning. So he books accommodation to stay the night. And he gets on the phone to his wife, and she is beside herself. Where are you? She says. And he's thinking, well, it's been like, I wouldn't have even landed yet. What's going on here? You see, the plane he was meant to be on, the one that they'd taken him off, had a mid-air collision. So if he'd been on that flight, he would be dead. Sometimes delay is for your benefit. And when God delays, it's always for your benefit and his glory.
Yeah.
See, Mary and Martha probably wanted Jesus to jump on the fastest camel he could find, ride it down to Bethany, lay his hands on Lazarus and say, Lazarus be healed, Lazarus to get out of bed fully well. And that would have been no less miraculous. And that's still a miracle. But this way, there was way more glory given to God.
Yes.
So, when God delays, it's for his glory and your benefit. And the second thing is God can turn hopelessness into trust in him. And he wants to. So who are our three groups of hopeless people? There was Lazarus, the dead man. hopelessly dead. And God turned that around by raising him back to life. Mary and Martha were hopelessly destitute. And Jesus turned that around by restoring their brother to him, to them, and their security in that. And the Jews? Well, it says in verse 45, that many of the Jews who had come to Mary and had seen the things Jesus did believed in him. See, they were hopelessly dead in their sins, with the Messiah right in front of them, but not able to see it. And by raising Lazarus from the dead, they saw that he was the resurrection and the life, the solution to the sin problem, their Messiah. And today, apart from Jesus, we are still hopelessly dead in our sins. Many out there who know no better, if they were to die today, would go to hell. Which is not easy to say. Without Jesus, there is no hope. But in Jesus, there is hope, an anchor for our souls. In him, death is dead. Love has won. Christ has conquered.